Hey guys, this is Mike Tagliere of Fantasy Pros, and you're listening to Fantasy Football Sunday.
He's a fantasy football genius, okay?
Play action. Jackson looks right, throws over the middle, he's got a man wide open. One-hand catch for the touchdown, Mark Andrews.
This is Fantasy Football Sunday with Ty Richardson and Evan Gentry.
Welcome into the first on-air edition of Fantasy Football Sunday. I'm Ty Richardson alongside Evan Gentry. We're bringing in Mike Tagliere, lead writer for Fantasy Pros. He's also the co-host of the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. Tags, thanks for joining us this morning, man.
Oh, man, it's my pleasure. We're talking football. It's a good day.
I was listening to y'all's pod earlier this week, and one of your boys, Kyle Yates, one of your co-workers, he is moving during fantasy football season. How'd you let him do that, man?
I mean, I had no say in it. I give him crap every day about it, and I said, how can you do this? I legitimately couldn't move. I'd be forcing my wife to do everything while I kind of sat there and just talked about football all day. The NFL season is just, my wife and I, we actually put off of our move. We're talking about moving this off season, and I always say off season because it's like, that's when I have to get things done like that. So I think he's nuts, but to each his own, right?
Yeah, whatever you want to do, whatever you want to put yourself through, that's you, man. Let's talk about Thursday night's game. The Bengals come up just short against the Cleveland Browns. I know you're a big AJ Green guy. I like what I've seen so far from Joe Burrow. Need some offensive line help. Where's the upside for AJ Green as a wide receiver in the 2020 football season?
You know, sadly, what I was worried about was that Joe Burrow, with no preseason and being a rookie, that he'd come in and he'd have some, you know, he'd be rough around the edges. And there are some things with him. His accuracy is spot on. His timing's a little bit off in terms of what he's expecting from defenses. And that's what NFL rookies, when they come into the NFL, they ask him what's the biggest change, and they always say it's the speed of the game. And I think Joe Burrow, he's learning that. There's going to be some kinks in that. But my biggest concern right now isn't Burrow. It's actually AJ himself. I've been a huge AJ Green fan for a long time, and I think he's been an underrated receiver for much of his career, but he doesn't look very good out there. He looks a little bit lanky. He looks like he's getting up there in age. You know, you still see guys like Julio Jones, who's around that same age. He's still moving well. AJ looks a little, I don't know if it's the year off football. I don't know if it's that he had to get back into football shape. It's encouraging to say that he's seen 20 targets over the two games. That's massive. That's volume you can't just find anywhere. And I told people, don't panic about Odell Beckham. He's going to be fine. He bounced back last night. I think AJ will, but I don't think he's getting back to that top 15 wide receiver that we saw in years past.
Another guy that I have on my fantasy team is Joe Mixon. Now, he hasn't gotten to the end zone yet to this point, but I like how they're trying to work him in the passing game. And just with playing a rookie quarterback, what's the ceiling for Joe Mixon, the former Oklahoma Sooner?
I'm willing to buy low on Mixon. You do have to temper expectations, and it was one of the things we worried about coming into the season is that Zach Taylor last year, he took him off the field in third down situations. He didn't get targeted a whole lot in the passing game, and it's a similar issue that we had to someone like Nick Chubb or even Josh Jacobs, where these guys they're very talented pass catchers. I think Mixon and Jacobs are the two that, I mean, Chubb is fine, but Mixon and Jacobs are actually very, very talented pass catchers, and you wonder why they come off the field. So if you're not going to see Mixon in game scripts where they fall behind and they're bringing on Giovanni Bernard for two-minute drills and third downs, that definitely cuts into his value. I do think it's going to help as time goes on and defenses realize that Joe Burrow is the real deal and they have to respect him through the air. So being that Zach Taylor does spread this offense out, that offensive line should get better. They have two new pieces on it this year, so it's going to take some time for them to kind of get some continuity. It's been rough in the front, but I'm actually a fan of buying low on Mixon right now because I think there's people that will sell him. Maybe you can go out there and say like a Raheem Mostert or someone in that territory. If you're able to move one of those guys for Joe Mixon, I'm doing it all day, every day.
Towards the end of last year, I know Zach Taylor said, you know, he gets better the more carries we give him. And he had a horrendous start first half of last year. And the last, it felt like 2 months of the season, they kind of figured out what they had in him. So hopefully, now if they're down 15, 20 points every game, it's not much going to matter. Mike, we have so many presuppositions and assumptions during the offseason. You know, we have months to think about and project what these offenses are going to look like, what target shares are going to look like, how many touches fantasy players or targets fantasy players are going to get every game. And then the season gets here with no preseason, and this is all kind of new information to us. After 1 week, have there been any situations, maybe for a player, maybe for a team, that didn't go the way, at least through 1 week, that you projected it to?
Ooh, that's a good question. I would say that Austin Eckler was a big shock to see him not involved in the passing game. He got one target last week. They need to change that, but it's kind of going back to the concerns we had about Tyrod Taylor. And, you know, when him back in Buffalo, when he was a starting quarterback there, he had LeSean McCoy, who was still in his prime. I'd say he was towards the end of his prime, but he didn't target him a whole lot. He targeted his tight ends a lot. Charles Clay was big at that time. Sammy Watkins had some of his most efficient games. So it was worrisome to see, you know, Keenan Allen struggle a little bit, to see Austin Eckler not get targeted for those who spent, you know, maybe an early second round pick on him. A.J. Brown, he's someone that, you know, Yates and I were talking about that. We actually watched that game. And A.J. Brown, we both agreed, he just didn't look like the same player he was last year. He was a guy that was going down, not much fight after the catch, and it came out that he's dealing with a knee injury, and he may miss some time. That led to someone like Corey Davis getting opportunity. That was one of the biggest surprises for me in week one, actually. Not necessarily Corey Davis being good, because I think that he had Devontae Parker kind of written all over him. Talented football player, bad quarterback situation, all that stuff, and then you know, the opportunity has arisen, and he performs when he gets targets. But Ryan Tannehill dropping back to pass over 40 times, and Derrick Henry getting, you know, 30 carries or whatever it was. So this offense being much faster paced than it was last year could amount to a lot of fantasy points for those Tennessee skill position players.
I know if you're a Chargers fan, even though you won last week, after what we saw on Thursday night, maybe the most concerning thing is that you only scored 16 points against this Bengals defense, and Cleveland goes for 35. You know, rookie wide receivers every year, if you're an NFL fan, you love the NFL draft, you watch these guys in college, and it's fun, right, to draft rookie wide receivers because there's so much name recognition. And historically, though, it almost feels like they break out in the second half of the year. So you'll draft a rookie wide receiver. You'll drop him when he's, you know, not acclimated in the offense yet. And then once they start getting a rhythm, pick him back up. What have you seen with this rookie wide receiver class, and who stands out to you?
There's going to be a lot of ups and downs for those guys, you know. The first game jitters. Someone like Quintez Cephas was a surprise guy to see 10 targets in his first NFL game. Cephas is someone I liked a lot and coming out of college, and I felt like he's going to get an opportunity in that Lions offense because Marvin Jones is a free agent after this year. Danny Amendola is a free agent. Toronto Allison opted out. They're probably just not going to pick him up again. So Cephas might be the number two opposite Galladay. So to see him get 10 targets in his first game, now he didn't do well with them. He had a drop in there. And I think there's a lot of jitters with these guys. Same thing with Jerry Jeudy. Jerry Jeudy is the best wide receiver prospect I've watched in the time that I've scouted. And I've only scouted for like 5 years now. So it's not like a long time, but Jerry Jeudy was so polished. He's a guy that's going to get separation on any level. He could play anywhere on the field. But there were some jitters in his first game. So you saw him drop an obvious one, and then there was another one that he probably should have caught considering the type of player he is. But these guys, it's weird because I don't know if any of them walked into ideal situations for them to produce immediately because Jeudy is clearly the number two behind Sutton. Sutton's going to come back, expected to be back this week. You have, CeeDee Lamb going to Dallas where I don't think people realize just how good Amari Cooper is and what he does for the other wide receivers in that team. Because if you leave Amari Cooper in man-to-man coverage, you're going to get screwed. And Jalen Ramsey actually learned that in week one. But Michael Gallup, a good number two receiver. So it's like you start looking at this offense and it says, okay, is there enough production for these guys to do it every single week? And Lamb, I think it's going to be difficult to judge his rookie year just because he has so much talent around him. And all he's going to be asked to do is he's going to run out his routes out of the slot. He's going to catch, you know, maybe 4 to 6 passes a game. And he's going to look solid. But the question is, what do wide receivers like him do when Amari's out of the lineup or if he's not there? So rookie receivers, it's a difficult learning curve for them this year. Wide receivers are typically not players that you want to rely on in fantasy football, especially in that first year. Last year was a crazy exception, but no rookie training camps, no offseason programs. There's just a lot of variables that go into it. So I'm approaching those guys with caution this year.
Mike Taglier with us at Mike Taglier NFL on Twitter. I was listening, Mike, to the Fantasy Pros football podcast earlier this week, and you guys were discussing Malcolm Brown and Cam Akers, and both Evan and I have both those guys because we're really interested to see how that shakes out. For our listeners that have drafted one or both of the Los Angeles Rams running backs, how do you see that backfield playing out?
I mean, if things go as planned for Sean McVay, it's going to look just like Kyle Shanahan's offense. And this is the reason I didn't end up with any of those guys in drafts this year. I did get Daryl Henderson a couple times late just to say, hey, I'll see what happens with this backfield. But I was unwilling to pay those prices for Cam Akers because there were quotes all over the place this offseason that had Sean McVay saying, we want to do things similarly to what Kyle Shanahan does in San Francisco. And McVay's a smart guy. He really is. I love that he's a young guy. He's willing to admit where he's wrong on certain things, and he will change things. He said that they're going to go with the hot hand. And if you go back to last year, this exact time last year, actually, Malcolm Brown had a big week one, and he was considered one of the biggest waiver wire pickups. And then, you know, Todd Gurley obviously ended up taking back that role. Cam Akers is not Todd Gurley, but I want to remind everyone that Malcolm Brown was on the team when they traded up to draft Daryl Henderson. He was on the team when they drafted Cam Akers with their second round pick last year. So clearly they don't love Malcolm Brown enough to avoid other running backs. I just think that the first time that Malcolm Brown struggles, you're going to see them work this rotation, and it's going to be ugly. So if you're able to sell Malcolm Brown high right now, like maybe package him with a wide receiver or something like that and go after someone like Joe Mixon, I'd be doing that. I would be trying to do that early.
Speaking of running backs, let's keep it in that conversation. People were just freaking out when Saquon Barkley didn't do anything against the Pittsburgh Steelers defense. What do you anticipate is going to be Saquon Barkley's fantasy football outlook the rest of the way?
I mean, anybody that watched that game would know that none of that was really on Saquon Barkley. That was brutal.
He couldn't do anything, man.
Saquon's always been a guy that's he'll take on a lot more risk to get that reward, and that's the type of player he is, and that's the thing. The Giants knew what they were getting when they drafted him. He was the same player at Penn State. Unfortunately, the NFL's a different animal. It's a little bit faster, and he's not breaking up those big plays. Now, the Giants did some shuffling on their offensive line. They had rookie tackle Andrew Thomas there at left tackle. I do like him as a tackle long-term, but again, it was his first NFL game against that Steelers defense. The Steelers last year, I don't think people realize, they allowed just one running back all year to score more than 14 PPR points. Like, that is absolutely ridiculous, and that just doesn't happen with NFL teams. So that was actually something that I talked about this preseason. I said, Saquon Barkley, people are taking him at number two. I would consider Zeke there, and the reason I'm saying that is because Saquon's start of his schedule is brutal. He goes up against the Pittsburgh Steelers, which we obviously saw the result of that. This week he's going against the Bears, who they did have Eddie Goldman opt out, so Adrian Peterson did get some work there. And then week three it was against the San Francisco 49ers, who now are dealing with a slew of injuries. So it might bounce back. I mean, Saquon is not – he's going to be fine, but last week – there was a, I don't know if you guys heard this, but there was a sports book out there that was offering at halftime the over-under on Saquon Barkley's rushing yards for the game at 8.
Wow.
And they must have made so much money on that because he came in, he finished with 6 rushing yards on 15 carries.
That just feels impossible. Oh my goodness. You may have just sort of covered this with Malcolm Brown and going back to last year where he did have 2 touchdowns in the week one, and it's almost like history is repeating itself, like pretty close to exactly here. Was there anything else you saw in week one or even what we saw on Thursday night that feels like fool's gold to you? Maybe a blow up performance that maybe even people are really buying into as being a hot waiver pickup, or maybe being sustainable, that you're just not buying?
Yeah, Brown was definitely the one that I was worried about, because I know that how they want to run that offense. I know how things can change on a weekly basis. Everyone else, I mean, it felt like, I don't want to say fool's gold, because in week one, I think that you should overreact most of the time more than underreact, because it's a new season. A lot of these guys have new coaches. There's new personnel around them, and things can change really, really fast. Whereas, if it's middle of the season, you have a breakout performance, that could be more of an outlier type thing where it could be the norm in week one, and that's what it is. But again, it's still the same offense under McVay, and he's talked about it. He's continually talked about wanting it to be a timeshare, and like kind of even talked about John Kelly before they cut him, saying that he wanted to get him involved. But ultimately, it'll be a three-headed monster with Malcolm Brown, Cam Akers, and Daryl Henderson. But again, this all comes back to, I think Malcolm Brown is going to hang around, but for me, the reason that Cam Akers, the reason that he didn't produce in college very much is because he played behind a poor offensive line.
Right.
Well, then he goes to the Rams, and it's like, I understand, I love Sean McVay, I love the play caller is, but that offensive line has some serious issues. And again, I think you're going to be able to get all these guys at a discount after this week because they're going into Philadelphia, coming off a bad loss to Washington. That Philadelphia defense is really good at stopping the run. So I expect them to be slowed, and all of a sudden you're going to see their value come back down to normal.
I love Andrew Whitworth, but if you watched Hard Knocks, he kind of looks like Santa Claus. It's like this guy's, it was pretty clear he had he was just kind of struggling to get through every practice. Regarding guys that were taken in the first, second round, guys you've really built your team around here, are there any situations that you are legitimately in worried, probably too strong of a word to use just with 1 week, but guys maybe you are really worried about?
I mean, I'm worried about Michael Thomas pushing, like, with that high ankle sprain. And I said that when it happened. We did a podcast right after that was released. And people are like, oh, why are you guys saying that they're going to rule him out? He said he could play through it. I'm like, no. The Saints need to do what's best for their team right now. And that is, I'm worried that Michael Thomas has not been put on the IR yet because they need to save him from himself. Michael Thomas is the type of guy that's going to push and push and push and say, I want to play. And if he keeps playing through that, we saw it last year with Saquon. We saw it with Alvin Kamara. These guys were not as efficient when they came back. And this is the Saints team that is built to win a Super Bowl. They can do it. They looked like crap in week one, and they still beat that Tampa Bay team. This defense is so good. They just need Michael Thomas to get healthy. I am worried about him. I never liked Mike Evans much, but with Chris Godwin now dealing with this concussion, Mike Evans is probably going to go off against Carolina this week. And then you should probably try and trade him.
Everyone goes off against Carolina, it feels like.
It's true. That team, that defense is just, I mean, I think they have seven new starters on defense, so it's going to be difficult for them. But no, I don't want to overreact too much. Again, a few of the players that we talked about already, like Austin Eckler, I am concerned about his role in the passing game. Joe Mixon, not getting that passing down work, not getting the two-minute drill work, is a little worrisome. But overall, I don't want to panic too much after 1 week.
Tags, you said two things there. One I liked, one I didn't. You said you really like the New Orleans Saints defense. I own them, so I'm happy about that. But you don't like Mike Evans. Man, I got Mike Evans, but I'm worried about Tom Brady's downfield throwing ability. Godwin's probably not going to play in this upcoming game. What can I expect from Mike Evans in a couple hours?
I mean, Mike Evans is going to – I do believe he's going to dominate this week. I mean, you look at the combination of cornerbacks they have out there. So they lost James Bradbury. Dante Jackson, I think, got hurt last week. I don't know if he's going to play. Their combination of cornerbacks right now would be Troy Pride, who's a rookie, Rasul Douglas, who's a cast-off from Philadelphia, and then Corn Elder. I'm not kidding. That's a real name. That's a real player in the NFL.
Wasn't he the kid that ran back the kickoff return against Duke for Miami a few years ago in that crazy? I think that's Duke Corn Elder.
That's my guy right there, Tags. So the guy that knows that, because I have no idea what he's talking about.
No, but those three together, they combined to allow 9 catches for 140 yards and a touchdown on 11 targets against the Raiders last week. So Mike Evans, I wanted to like Evans even if Godwin was going to play, but this concussion issue popping up and all that, it was like, okay, if Godwin's out, I'm all in on Mike Evans, and I expect him to get 10 to 12 targets in this game, and he should crush.
I'll tell you a wide receiver that I was all in with a certain quarterback back, and that is Juju Smith-Schuster. And we saw him following the Monday Night Football game, Ben Roethlisberger's talking to Lisa Salters, and you hear Juju walking off the field, stopping by and say, that's my quarterback. Let me tell you something, Tags. That is my quarterback because I have Juju, and he is going to be, as long as he's healthy, he is going to be a beast this year, and I cannot wait.
He's so fun to watch. I mean, he only had 6 targets in that game, but he made all of them count, caught all of them for 69 yards, 2 touchdowns. It was good to see him back with Roethlisberger. And Roethlisberger looked like he had to shake some stuff off, too, and he got better as the game went on. Deontay Johnson, he's going to be so good. I like Deontay Johnson a lot, but Juju is someone I had ranked as the top 8 wide receiver in this year's draft rankings. And I just said that him moving back to the slot, having Deontay Johnson out there as a legitimate threat on the perimeter, it's going to give Juju so many matchup issues. And you saw what happened on Monday night. It's just all he has to do is beat those guys in the slot. Most of the guys that play in the slot are not top-tier cornerbacks. They're nickel cornerbacks that come on the field in 3 wide receiver sets. So those guys are not even starting material most of the time. Now, there are a few in the league that they're very good at what they do. But Juju showed how to take advantage of those guys in week one, and I expect him to continue to do that as the Steelers offense, and Ben Roethlisberger gets, the win back under his sails.
Are there any sneaky plays you like this week as far as in your starting lineup?
Let me see. If you want to look at wide receiver, Alan Lazard, I actually think is actually a solid play. Marquez Valdez-Scantling is the one getting a lot of the notoriety for what he did last week because he saw 6 targets, caught 4, yada, yada. But Alan Lazard was right there with Davante Adams in terms of targets. It seems like the Lions might get number 3 overall pick, Jeffrey Okuda, back. And Okuda, he's not going to be able to hang with Davante Adams, but if he could at least slow him down, it would allow someone like Alan Lazard to produce more than I think people expect him to. And let's see, Scott Miller. If Godwin is out, I think Scotty Miller has become somewhat of a favorite of Tom Brady, and he's getting targeted down the field. He's getting targeted over the middle of the field. They're going to move the ball against Carolina. So if you're looking for, you know, a last-ditch wide receiver that you need to throw in there because you lost Michael Thomas or something like that, I think he's someone you can go to.
You know, Edelman has to be jealous seeing what Brady's – he's got a new Edelman, and it's Scotty Miller, and Edelman's – he can't love that.
I'm sure – I mean – Edelman's in a different situation now, and I'm really curious to see how the Patriots do against a team that's not the Dolphins. So they're playing Seattle. We'll see how Cam Newton-led Patriots do against those Seahawks.
Tags, before we let you go, man, we always do this for all our guests. You're on multiple radio stations here in the state of Arkansas. You're on multiple platforms. Tell us why they should read your stuff at Fantasy Pros and listen to the Fantasy Pros podcast.
Oh man, I put my heart and soul into this. It's my life, you know, for most of the year. And, you know, I understand on Twitter, I can't get to all the questions that I get, but that's why I write this piece. It's called The Primer. I write a full paragraph on every player from every game so you can understand the process, because fantasy football, it's not always about the results. You have to understand the process behind those decisions you're making. And sometimes they work out, sometimes they don't. But I want to give you the most confidence, say, hey, I'm starting this guy over that guy because of this. And I promise you, if you check that out in the primer or listen to the Fantasy Pros Football podcast, I'm going to do my best to make sure you're confident when you do that.
And you can follow him on Twitter at Mike Taglier NFL. Make sure you're reading his stuff at fantasypros.com and listening to the Fantasy Pros Football podcast. Mike, always love catching up, man. Best of luck this fantasy football season. We'll do it again soon.
No, of course. Thanks a lot, guys.
Missed any of Fantasy Football Sunday? Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You're listening to Fantasy Football Sunday with Ty Richardson and Evan Gentry.
He's missed from 47. He's had one blocked from 44. He's missed from 42. He's missed an extra point. Snap. Set. Kick. Good! Redemption for Gostkowski.
So a lot of times after week one of the NFL season, fantasy players overreact. There's constant overreactions, and we can talk about what we saw on Thursday night with the Cincinnati Bengals and the Cleveland Browns. We can talk about what we saw week one from a bunch of those teams, but let's start with the most recent. Let's start with Thursday night's game between the Browns, between the Bengals. What do you think people are going to overreact to based on that performance for both those teams?
Probably a mix between Joe Mixon and Cincinnati's pass catchers. I mean, last night you saw at the end of the game, T. Higgins get hurt. You saw A.J. Green drop a touchdown pass. You saw the late touchdown.
Got held, man. They didn't call that P.I. That was so tough.
I don't know. I can't figure out if A.J. Green, he looks like he's a little tentative out there so far. And the fact that Burrow threw the ball, it felt like 60 times. You know, they're really flinging it around.
Legitimately throw it 60 times.
And they're opening up the playbook for him. As far as an overreaction goes, probably Joe Mixon, because if you have Joe Mixon, hand up, two leagues.
Same here. I'll agree with you there.
They worked him in the most exciting thing to see was they worked him in the passing game early. That's something they did not do week one against the Chargers. Against the Chargers, I don't know if he had 15-yard receiving. They're getting him in the passing game early. He has, you know, close to 9 to 10 points at halftime, and you think, okay, this looks great. And in the second half, there was close to nothing. And especially when they're trying to dig themselves out of the hole, now it's more Giovanni Bernard. If you have Joe Mixon, he's probably your running back one. He might be your running back two. He doesn't have 20 points combined for the year. Through 2 weeks, he doesn't have a touchdown yet. That is where people were overreacting. And I'm not overreacting because I see how they're using him. I told my buddy last night, other than Barkley and Henry, I don't think there's a running back in the NFL that's on the field more when their offense is out there. It feels like Gio Bernard's out there every third or fourth drive, it feels like. So I'm not selling on Mixon. I'm still confident. I love how they're using him and his workload so far.
And what you like about Joe Mixon is not only is he a lethal runner, but he's a lethal pass catcher. And sometimes you have those kind of scat backs that take over on third down in a passing type situation. And I know Bernard was in there on some occasions last night, but a lot of times Mixon is still in there on third down because he has the game breaking ability in the passing game. And as you mentioned, they got him involved early. But what was very irritating to me, Ev, was Gio Bernard gets down to like the inch line or whatever it was, and Mixon all he has to do is just stick his nose in the end zone. And I don't know if the play call was designed to go outside, but he breaks one tackle and then just gets eaten alive by that Cleveland Brown defense. And I'm like, you had like 2 inches to get from the ball positioning where it started, and then you lost 5 yards. And I was just so angry. And then also on that drive, you had a push off on CJ Uzama, and it was an OPI when he got tackled. I was like, that would have put it on the like
on the one again.
On the one again. I was like, and then Mixon would have got another chance. I know it was aggravating for you as a Mixon owner, and it was aggravating for me as a Mixon owner watching how that drive transpired. And they had to settle for a field goal.
They had it on like the 12-yard line. That's one of the things we keep forgetting with Cincinnati. And one of these years, I will
Bullock made it.
Not
though.
Forget that offense. The offensive line, they just cannot block, and they got Jonah Williams back, and they've looked better at times this year, and it will take them a few weeks here to figure it out if they figure it out, but it's pretty overtly obvious that those guys have no idea what they're doing. And yeah, you're on the 1-yard line. Nothing makes you feel more alive than when you're on the 1-yard line, right? Because you start standing up, it's like, okay, here we go, here's my guy, here's 7 points. And he bounced it outside, and I think he lost 4 or 5 yards on the play.
They need Joe Thomas back, the former retired NFLer.
Joe Thomas, super marathon runner right now. I don't know if you've seen what he looks like. Yeah, he's like 180 pounds. All those offensive linemen, as soon as they're out of the league, they're eating gluten-free protein pancakes, and they're biking 7,000 miles. It's crazy.
Good for him, man. Yeah. That's quite impressive. I mean, you think about your franchise quarterback. You probably know this off the top. Who's the GM? Is it Dorsey? Is he the GM?
No, it's Andrew Berry.
Okay.
Oh, no. Well, for the Browns?
For the Bengals.
Bengals? Oh, I can't remember. Okay. I forget.
For him, whoever that may be, and we'll look it up in just a sec, you got to be a little worried based on your franchise quarterback, the hits he was taking last night. I know on the Myles Garrett strip sack, he got pummeled by, I believe, Sheldon Richardson and just got his face put it in.
Welcome to the NFL.
Like, I mean, that is a welcome point. And listen, I think you know how there's certain players, like Baker was one of the guys that guys really wanted to just kill as soon as they got in the league. They just wanted to put him in the turf. Manziel. I don't think Lamar was that. I don't think Mahomes was that. I don't think Joe is, because I don't think Joe's been doing a lot of talking and stuff. But you got to be a little worried as a Bengals fan, the beating that Joe Burrow is taking these first two games. If he continues to take this type of punishment to his body, he's not going to hold up this season.
He's looked really good. There are some things you notice. He holds on to the ball too long sometimes. Yeah, these are plays at LSU. You know, with LSU, I mean, that offense won the Joe Moore War, so he could sit back for 6 seconds and pick where he wanted to go. This is obviously a lot different, and you combine that with the fact that that line cannot really block at all. These are things he's going to figure out. I will say, through 2 weeks, I'm really impressed with Joe Burrow, and that's a simple thing to say here, but they are not afraid. They are giving him the reins. Even last week in the Chargers game, they're going down the field. Okay, the field goal didn't end up working out, but they were going for 6. They weren't, you know, they took the leash off of him early. And even again last night, 60 passes. There are things he needs to figure out, and that will come with just in-game experience. But if you're a Bengals fan, you have to love what you see. Of course, you don't like the hits, but, you know, that's part of the game, and those are things he will figure out.
So Mike Brown is the owner and general manager of the Bengals.
Worst owner in maybe professional sports, Mike Brown.
Is he?
Oh, yeah. You got to read up on Mike Brown. He's awful.
Interesting.
That's why they always lose.
Okay, that's a good point. So we're talking about the Bengals. We talked about Mixon. We talked about Burrow. We talked a little about AJ Green. Let's flip the script. Let's go Browns. We saw Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham hook up for a big touchdown on Thursday night. I had Odell Beckham Jr. last year. He didn't do anything for me. I didn't care where he landed. I was not going to draft him last year because I thought my frustration would be farther along than what he was actually worth. But you saw it last night. This team has potential. The play action fake when you have Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb in your backfield is lethal. But we also have to factor in if it's the Bengals. So how much can you really take away from Thursday night's performance from Baker Mayfield and his core of wide receivers?
You take wins any way you can get them in the NFL. And of course, the Bengals defense doesn't, you know, they leave a whole lot to be desired. But the blueprint, really what Kevin Stefanski wants to do, it was on display last night. You know, Stefanski, he's a guy who's been in Minnesota for years. He loves the play action, you know, zone runs, hand the ball off 40 times a game, and we're going to take our shots when they're necessary. That looked exactly like you wanted it to look for Cleveland. It's not rocket science for Cleveland, okay? You have the best 1-2 running back tandem in the NFL. You know, when you watch Nick Chubb run,
is that even a debate at this point?
No, it's not. I don't want to sit here and try to think of a second one. But
Ingram and Dobbins look pretty good.
I mean, those two guys. Kareem Hunt would be a starting running back for half the league, probably more than that. But it looked how you wanted it to look. it needs to be running the ball 60% of the time and then taking your shots when you find them. And the Bengals made a late push. But if you're a Kareem Hunt owner, you know, you didn't have your expectations. You probably got him as your running back two, maybe even running back three. I mean, so far, that certainly looks like an offense here that's going to be able to, you know, accommodate two top running backs. I mean, I think Hunt had two touchdowns. They had two touchdowns each last night. Now, of course, it's the Bengals, but you have to be inspired if you have either of those guys, and especially Chubb after his less than stellar performance week one.
I know I'm in a Survivor League that you were a part of. Ugh. Well, unfortunately, who'd you go with?
I took Phillip Rivers. Why did I? I overthought it.
Oh, man. There is nothing that's more fun to watch than Phillip Rivers in crunch time down because you just know a pick is coming. You know a pick is coming, and he delivered once again. So I'm this league. We've got it down to 25 members now. It started at 40-something, and so it's almost half the league has been shaved off. One of my buddies, Wynn, he picked the Cleveland Browns Thursday night. He was sweating a little bit, but they finally came through. I'm kind of debating. We'll get in this conversation coming up. I'm not for sure who I'm going to go with this week in my Survivor League, but just kind of to top off the Browns conversation and the Bengals conversation, it was an enjoyable game to watch, and sometimes Thursday night football games are not necessarily the case, but I think for a Thursday night football game, it lived up to the billing. So excited to see more of those. Obviously, Sunday night football is my... What do you rank, real quick, what do you rank between Sunday night football, Monday night football, Thursday night football, and that 3:30 game on Fox or CBS? Where do you rank those games?
Yeah, I got one more thought from what we saw on Thursday night. That game, historically, Bengals-Browns, it's always a dumpster fire, right? It's two teams that can't get out of their own way, at least now, and at least for the near future. It looks like they have two quarterbacks that are going to make this entertaining. That was a fun game last night, 35-30. You know, the jokes usually write themselves in the Battle of Ohio, if you want to call it that. But I am excited, especially as an AFC North guy. You know, as far as ranking the different broadcasts, Sunday Night Football is the best. I don't think there's any
order one
question about that. And then I guess, you know, I probably take Thursday over Monday. I'm not a huge Monday night. A lot of times ESPN, I don't know how they always get the second tier matchups. You can look at the Sunday night schedule and the Monday night schedule, and it's like, what? Does ESPN, like, what are they doing here with some of these matchups?
Well, to Sunday night football's credit, they get to pick the week of, so they can kind of figure it out. Monday night football, the schedule's already set, so that's how they go about doing that. But still, you'd think, like, as an ESPN executive, as the ones deciding that, hey, you could pick out the better matchups of the week early on, right? I would think
they do get the best game of the year. They get Kansas City Baltimore next Monday. It doesn't get any better than that.
That is a good game.
I love Thursday night too because it's kind of like an appetizer, right? It's the sampler platter with the nachos and the potato skins and the chicken wings that come out before your weekend really even before you get into it.
When did that start? It's only been a couple years since they've been playing Thursday night football, correct?
I think less than five.
Okay.
And the players don't love it because it is a little bit unfair. It's a very, very short window there for players to get healthy.
Show them how it works. They get more money if you do it. That's the consistent. Well, okay, then you're not going to get as much money. That's how they do that. That's why they do that. That's all owners have to say. It's like, hey, this is why your contract. This is the TV rights. This is how it gets. If they want to argue that and they want to take less money, that's fine. But that's, and I get your perspective too, because like you go from Thursday night and then you go to Sunday night and then from Sunday to Thursday, I get that perspective. But that's how the contracts works. There's an NFLPA for a reason. You didn't want to play on Thursday night. You should have gone against it. So good conversation on the Browns-Bengals that we saw on Thursday night. And just to tie a bow on that, I'm excited to see the development of Baker Mayfield and Joe Burrow. I want to see which one in Ohio stands out more.
Hey, this is Sigmund Bloom with footballguys.com, and you're listening to Fantasy Football Sunday.
You're listening to Fantasy Football Sunday with Ty Richardson and Evan Gentry.
I'm excited we won the game, Jerry. I'll tell you that. You know, I told the guys before the game, it's not about me individually. The reason I came back is for these guys, for this team. It's a special group of football players and men. I'm just thankful to be a part of it.
Let's go back to week number one. Let's see what we saw. That was a week two matchup between the Browns and the Bengals. We've got week two matchups coming up very shortly. You can hear it here on ESPN Arkansas. We also are the home of the Kansas City Chiefs on ESPN 95.3 and ESPN 104.3. So let's get some reactions from that. Chiefs did what they thought you were going to do in game one, man. Patrick Mahomes and company, that offense is just lethal. He threw it all over the yard. it's going to be a fun team to watch this year. Any overreactions or things you saw in the Chiefs matchups, takeaways that you think stood out between the Houston Texans?
They got a new toy. They got a Corvette in the backfield. And for teams who sort of have it all, I think they kind of like to keep things spicy.
The rich keeps getting richer, man.
And that's exactly what Clyde does for them. It's like, you know, how I think they kind of get bored. I mean, when you score those many points and you're that efficient, it's like, you know, what can we not do? I think he kind of adds an element to that offense where it feels like they're going to try to get him touches just because it's something a little bit different there.
Any concerns on the other side of the ball with Deshaun Watson not seemingly having a lot of weapons? Yes, we know the speed of Will Fuller. He dropped a few passes in that game. Darren Fells looked like a pretty good tight end. I think that Watson's going to look to him more. But you could definitely tell this is not the same team without DeAndre Hopkins.
For some reason, it always looks like really forced with the Texans. I look up and it's Watson just scrambling on a 3rd and 15 short of the first down. You know, you see DeAndre Hopkins tweet after the Cardinals win, you know, so happy where I want to be, almost kind of rubbing it in. It really feels like that breakup didn't go.
And that's not to Deshaun, that's to Bill O'Brien.
Yeah, exactly. You can read some of the reporting there. Bill O'Brien was less than polite to his star wide receiver. It's just a lack of weapons. I mean, Will Fuller, it feels like he turns in 4-game seasons every year. You know, Brandon Cooks really didn't show you anything. Randall Cobb didn't really show you much. I mean, the bright spot was David Johnson. People think they kind of casted him aside and thought he looked done, old, and spent. And he at least had some pep. I mean, he looked good. I think he scored once or twice. He had a very nice fantasy day. I'd be concerned. I mean, especially, you know, now you have Baltimore on Sunday, and there's a good chance you're going to be 0-2. But you know, it's simple for these teams. You have the franchise quarterback, okay? So it could always be a lot worse.
Yeah, that's a good point when it makes that conversation. There's a lot of teams out there that would do a lot for Deshaun Watson. One of those teams that was seemingly the case was the Chicago Bears. Let's talk about Mitchell Trubisky and what they were able to do against Detroit. Now, we have to start with what you and I both watched on Sunday. How bad do you feel for DeAndre Swift? I mean, Matt Stafford could not have thrown a better ball, would have ended the game, would have given the Lions a victory, and yet it just went right through his hands.
It's the encapsulation of being a Lions fan. I mean, it's them and like 4 or 5 other professional teams who like haven't been to, you know, this far in the playoffs in like 100 years. That's being a Lions fan summed up in one play. When Swift caught the ball, I mean, he didn't catch the ball, but it's like he turned up field like he still had to run 50 yards. It's almost like he had no idea he was falling into the end zone and didn't need to turn up field. And it's the perfect example of, you know, not watching it in your hands. That's preschool stuff, but just a crushing blow, especially going back in the game. They throw a pick with like 2 minutes left to even give Chicago a chance. They got the ball up a touchdown before Chicago even got the ball back and threw the touchdown to Anthony Miller. So just par for the course for how the Lions always find a way to crush anyone that cheers for that team.
Does Trubisky have any fantasy value to you? Like, is he a second teamer? I had him for a little bit last year. He had 3 or 4 games where he gave me solid numbers. I mean, 3 touchdowns in this one. I thought he looked pretty good, especially late. Any inclination to pick up a Mitchell Trubisky out of Chicago? And that's not to say that he might not lose his job to Nick Foles moving forward.
He's a matchup guy for me. I don't think you start him every week. You pick your spots and find a good spot where you can play him against the defense who is not faring well against the pass or the run. You know, the thing with him that does give him value is that he can scamper. He can take off and run for a few yards. And the way fantasy football scores, where every 10 yards is 1 point and 1 point for 25 passing yards, if you can rush the ball, right, things that guys like Brady and Breeze aren't doing here, that at least gives you, you know, a bit of an advantage in a way to the floor is a lot higher if you can scramble and rush for 50 yards a game.
That's a great point. And I have Cam Newton, and we'll shift into the Patriots conversation for my Survivor League pick. That's who I went week one. They beat the Dolphins 21-11 in this matchup. Cam Newton had 2 rushing touchdowns, 25 points in my fantasy league. They're matched up against Seattle this week, and I'm not going to start Newton even though he played better than Dak Prescott. I think week one, Prescott and Dallas, they get Atlanta in Jerry World.
What a fun game. That's going to be great.
Oh, they're both going to be great. But let's start with the Pats and just their week one win. You can't really take that much away from the Dolphins. Fitzpatrick threw at least 2 interceptions, might have thrown 3. I mean, the Pats, to me, I'm really excited to see what Josh McDaniels can do with Cam Newton, because he had Brissett, he had Tebow, he's had some running quarterbacks over the years. What is he going to be able to do with Cam Newton in this offense? We saw a glimpse against the Dolphins. The matchup, though, Seattle, in Seattle, 12th man. I know it's not a fully capacity, but Pete Carroll's defense, they're going to be ready to play against Bill Belichick Sunday night. And this Sunday night game, too. It's the best game of the week.
It is. Oh, Collinsworth. The last two times those two teams played, Super Bowl, right? One of the best Super Bowls we've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
The way that unfolded, the Malcolm Butler interception. And then the next time they played was one of the more underrated regular season games. It was the fourth and goal. Cam Chancellor on Gronkowski.
Pull down.
Maybe a little bit. It was a no-call. Every time these two teams get together, it's a whole lot of fun. I felt like I was in a different universe on Sunday watching the Patriots play and number 12 not be back there, right? It felt really weird. And then especially when you start watching Tampa and you see Brady on that side. You know, it's the creativity for me. McDaniels and Belichick, there are no two greater minds in the NFL, especially when it comes to innovation. What he can do, the different skill set he brings, things that Brady has really never been able to do. I hope for Cam Newton, you know, he's on a one-year deal. I hope they don't run him into the ground. Because you've seen with Newton, it's been a health issue for the last few years here. At the end of his Carolina stint, he certainly didn't look right. He's throwing balls into the ground here. If they run him 16 times a game, and I will say this, their skill positions, right? I mean, who gets you excited over there? N'Keal Harry, Sony Michel.
I think N'Keal's Julian Edelman, questionable, if I remember that correctly.
There's not much to work with there, but it's fun. And, you know, anytime you can get a guy like Cam Newton, who's won an MVP, been to a Super Bowl, paired with Belichick, it's must watch. And I cannot wait for this game. I'm elated to watch this Sunday night matchup.
And I will probably be at your house watching this because, like you,
let's
I'm
do
very
it.
Excited. So the other side of the football, other quarterback, Russell Wilson goes for four touchdowns in his first game. DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett both slightly under 100 yards, both have a touchdown in this one. Lockett did not, but Metcalf did. I really like Seattle. I really like that offense. I think the defense, even without Davion Clowney, I mean, they've always had a salty defense when Pete Carroll's been there for the most part. This team, to me, I'm curious, though, because we thought they were, what, the number one or number two rushing team behind? Were they number one or number two behind
Baltimore?
They'd
have been two.
Okay. Behind Baltimore. So, I mean, just a lethal rushing attack, but we saw that Russell Wilson, he can still spin it, Ev. Like, he's still going to get you a lot of points. I'm curious to what Pete Carroll decides he wants that offense to be in 2020, and I think we'll see just kind of a more of a challenge when they go against Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots at home on Sunday night.
Yeah, I think we're all winners here because the word with Russell Wilson for the last few years, there's that phrase, everyone hears it, right? Let Russ cook. And for the longest time, it's been 3 yards in a pile of dust with Daryl Bevel was the OC there for the longest time, and it feels like that's Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll likes to keep the game close. And then in the fourth quarter, unleash Russell Wilson. That's almost his blueprint. That's their MO here. Doing that is like having Steph Curry and bringing him off the bench, being just a defensive-oriented guy, right? You have one of the most exciting players in the league. It's almost like the fan reaction was so large and the pressure was so large that maybe they're starting to change this year with Russell Wilson and letting him, you know, unleash it and just completely take off. And it's, certainly that's how it felt against the Falcons. Now, that is a game where the pace is going to get out of hand and there are going to be more points scored just because it's anytime you play the Falcons, it's going to be 40-30. But if what we saw on Sunday is any indication of what we're going to get all year, Russell Wilson, quarterback 1, 2, or 3 on the year, if they let him do that, and Seattle's going to be just so much fun to watch, as they always are, but even more so if they're really unleashing him.
I'll tell you another quarterback that's going to be fun to watch this year, and I think it's because he's going to be highly motivated, as we saw from week one. That's Aaron Rodgers, man. Now, he was left outside the, top 15, top 20 of ESPN's NFL list. I'm forgetting the exact ranking, but when he has been not inside what he's typically accustomed to, he has gone off, and he went off against the Minnesota Vikings. My goodness gracious, had 364 passing yards, 4 touchdowns. He gets Matthew Stafford and the Lions in Lambeau this week. I think Aaron Rodgers, as good as that team was under Matt LaFleur rushing the football last year, I think Aaron Rodgers is going to show the world, hey, I'm still Aaron Rodgers. I'm still the best, if not one of the best quarterbacks in the game. He is going to be an unreal fantasy guy in 2020.
I heard Trent Dilfer say earlier this week on Ryan Russillo's podcast that maybe the Packers took Jordan Love just to motivate Aaron Rodgers, which I do find a very questionable philosophy, even if that is the case, because maybe let's not waste first-round picks to motivate a guy we're paying $35 million to. But listen, maybe it worked, too. You saw a side of Rodgers on Sunday. It feels like we haven't seen. in at least a few years, and he's throwing touchdowns.
Playing angry.
He's throwing touchdowns with 20 seconds left in the first half. You know, they score over 40 points here against a traditionally solid Minnesota defense. Now, they are a lot younger this year, and there's some metrics here that kind of scare you, but if this is the Rodgers we're going to get all year, I cannot wait, because watching that guy play, the things he does, I've heard he's thrown, like, what, two pick sixes his entire career? It's almost hard to even imagine someone with that precision.
I would like to talk to Brett Good about this, former Green Bay Packer, former teammate of Aaron Rodgers, and former Arkansas Razorback. It's just kind of what you referred to. Like, this is a guy that doesn't really need motivation. He's highly talented. But when he gets something extra, just get out of his way. That's why I am leaning highly towards picking the Packers over Lions in the Survivor League this weekend, because I think he's just going to go off. So we were talking about Joe Burrow getting sacked over and over a while back. And I tell you, a team that's been bringing it, the Washington football team. I mean, Chase Young, we both love watching Chase Young in college at Ohio State.
Jonathan Allen.
Kerrigan, Jonathan Allen, Alabama. I mean, that front is loaded. What did we see from San Francisco last year with Nick Bosa and that defensive line? You can be a dominant NFL team when you have a solid young front. And that's what the Washington football team has. Now, we don't know about the Eagles yet, but I'm excited to see how much havoc and how much fantasy production we can see from the Washington football team defense.
It's pretty simple, right? I mean, when you get those guys on defense and you can do to the Eagles what they did to Carson Wentz, it makes things a whole lot easier. It feels like, if you've been watching the NFL draft, it feels like Washington's taken a defensive tackle in the first 10 picks for like 20 years now, so at least it's nice to see it, you know, pay off. But this is a team that, you know, they're looking at a different identity here. They have Ron Rivera over there, right? A consummate professional. And now we Ron Rivera's in our prayers here. It did come out that he had a lymph node cancer, I believe, and hopefully he can fight through that. The reports are good, but he's going to bring a leadership to that team that they haven't seen before, especially with Jay Gruden. You can kind of read some of the stuff that his off-the-field antics here. So I'm excited for Washington. You know, I still don't know with Haskins. I think that's still to be determined, and they're still working with him, and hopefully he can sort of take that next step. But the defensive line, I mean, Chase Young, if you're a fan of an NFL team that's not the Washington football team, would you go three unprotected first-round picks for Chase Young? Four? Like, what's the number there? Because, I mean, what he's going to do the next 10 years... it's horrifying.
He's ferocious, man. There's no question about it. And he just looks, he's one of those, like, get off the bus guys. And sometimes those guys don't necessarily live up to the billing on the football field. But he's both. Like, he walks off the bus and it's like, all right, this dude's going to be good at football. And then he delivers time and time again. All right, let's move on. I want to talk about Christian McCaffrey here for a sec. First-year head coach I almost said Matt LaFleur, good grief. And why
Matt
am I forgetting?
Rule.
And Matt Rule. Yeah, I would think I should probably know my dad's alma mater's former head coach in Matt Rule. To me, like, Christian McCaffrey is always going to be good fantasy value. He's always going to go one, two, or three in your leagues, depending on where you draft Zeke, depending on where you draft Saquon Barkley. I'm wondering, though, with the quarterback situation, with Teddy Bridgewater and stuff, is he going to be elevated, or is he just kind of be the same he was last year? Which, I mean, you take what he was last year, right?
After week one, I mean, you don't feel bad if you have Christian McCaffrey. What we saw week one, it maybe looks like offensively.
It's not Saquon Barkley week one time.
Correct,
it's
right.
Different.
And with most of his year last year was spent with Kyle Allen throwing the ball to him, and it felt like he had 12 receptions a year, because I think everyone assumed here that Teddy Bridgewater was going to come in and just throw it short 25 times a game. But, you know, they were going deep. They were throwing deep to Robbie Anderson. You know, it's 1 week, like we said at the beginning of this podcast here, we are not going to overreact. You still love it if you have Christian McCaffrey, and any running back you can start that's not hurt, right, especially with the great guys that drop him like fries right now. You don't feel bad about it, but it will be interesting to watch. Is his usage the same? I think a lot of people just assume year to year, despite coaching turnover, despite different offensive schemes, that a player's workload is going to look the exact same. That is not always the case, and that's shown itself several times in the NFL.
Missed any of Fantasy Football Sunday? Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You're listening to Fantasy Football Sunday with Ty Richardson and Evan Gentry.
Third down, goal to go at the two for Mahomes. Sprinting to the right side, fires Tyreek Hill. He's got it! Touchdown! Kansas City, the third touchdown pass of the night for Patrick Mahomes, and the Chiefs convert on third and goal from the two.
I want to move on to the Dallas Cowboys. I'm surprised we haven't got to this point. It's pretty late in the program here. Dak Prescott did not do what I wanted him to do against the Los Angeles Rams. Pro Football Focus rated the Dallas Cowboys offensive line as the third worst in the NFL week one. Now they get the Falcons week two. They're back in Jerry World. I mean, we know the weapons Dak has. Gallup, Lamb, Cooper. I think Cooper's going to eat A.J. Terrell alive this week. I mean, he is just going to torch him. So if you're Dak and Dallas and Kellen Moore, the OC, and Mike McCarthy, the head coach, please turn Dak loose. I need him here week two.
I have this actually in my notes here. It's under no Jarwin. It was not fun to see Blake Jarwin go down like he did on Sunday night. He's gone for the year as a non-contact ACL injury. This is going to make it so much easier for Dak Prescott here. I love that he's almost forced to just open this thing up. You know, I would probably rank it Cooper, Lamb, and then Gallup. And Gallup does do some tremendous things, and he's certainly in his second or third year here. Love the way he runs routes. They have no choice but to just air it out downfield here. Now, obviously, Zeke's still going to get a ton of work. And I was really impressed, and they always do this, but the way Zeke in the receiving game against Los Angeles, maybe because Donald was in Dak's face so much that he had to dump it off, but
didn't have enough.
There's no question what that guy's role is. He's a running back one every single week. I'm going to love watching Dak Prescott throw this, fling the pill, if you will, around to these guys, because there's probably not a better 1-2-3 wide receiver, you know, trio in the NFL if you want to go strictly wide receivers. And now without Jarwin, they're going to have to do that. Really, it's going to force their hands to do that even more. CeeDee Lamb looked great, right? He had the block in the back on the first or second drive. Welcome to the NFL. But I think 3 receptions, 55 yards. You know, they're going
to
have
needs
all
to find the sticks. Rookie mistake. There was like a 3rd and 2, yeah, and he ran
fourth,
a 1 yard.
It was fourth down.
He ran a 1 yard in when he should have ran a 2 yard. And I was
who's
so
that on?
Mad
is that on? Is that on Lamb?
Yes,
or the quarterback,
it's on Lamb.
There?
No, as a wide receiver, you find the sticks. Dak Prescott can't throw it 1 yard past the line. You find the sticks.
Fair enough.
I know as an Oklahoma fan, you want to defend your guy. That's on CeeDee Lamb. No. I mean, you're welcome to defend.
I actually agree. I do agree
with
you there.
All right. We can leave it there. Let's go to another big-time southern city, Nashville, Tennessee. Tennessee Titans taking on the Jacksonville Jaguars. Gardner Minshew and company got a big win week one. Everyone thinks they're just going to be terrible, yet they get the win. That team, I think, is going to be able to come around. Gardner Minshew, people really like him. He's one of the most captivating, not only quarterbacks, but players in the NFL. But this is a really good Tennessee Titans defense. I think Derrick Henry is going to get a lot more yards, a lot more fantasy production in week number two. Any thoughts on this game today?
This could be Derrick Henry's Mona Lisa. I mean,
where he puts up like 25, 30 fantasy points today.
It could be 35 carries, 212 yards, 3 touchdowns. Maybe a short through the. Even though he doesn't really catch receiving touchdowns here, he's consensusly ranked here as the number one running back for this second week because he's going up against Jacksonville, a defense that you're going to look at some of the turnover that Jacksonville's had on that side of the ball over the last 4 years when it used to be Calais Campbell, AJ Bouye, Jalen Ramsey, and now you're looking over there. And I do like what the rookie CJ Henderson did out of
it looks
Florida
like
this
LSU's
week.
Roster from the national championship game compared to what the roster you're talking. There's just so many cross off the list that they're just gone.
It does. This could be Derrick Henry's biggest game of the year. You love the matchup, especially if you have Derrick Henry. I just love how much fun the Jaguars have. Some teams don't have fun. You watch the Jets play. The Jets are not having a lot of fun out there. Part of that's because Adam Gase is their head coach. But Jacksonville, it's like, this Minshew guy, man, are you kidding me? I mean, you see him in these post-game interviews with the headband and the Fu Manchu mustache, and like he doesn't look like an athlete. I mean, he looks like some dude that's delivering Bush Light, right, to your local corner store. It's like, He's wearing shorts. How is he doing this, man? And that game on Sunday when they won, you know, despite being widely regarded as the worst team in the league, it's just refreshing, even in that professional league where it can be such a business and losing can wear on you so much. I like watching them play. They are fun to watch play.
Evan, I agree 100%. Gardner Minshew is just awesome. Bunch of games coming up. Giants, Bears at 12. Falcons, Cowboys at 12. Lions, Packers at 12. Jaguars and Titans at 12. And the Vikings and Colts at 12. Bills and Dolphins at 12. 49ers, Jets at 12. Eagles, Rams at 12. Broncos, Steelers at 12. And Panthers, Buccaneers at 12. If you have a player in one of those games, make sure you set your lineup. That's going to do it for us here on Fantasy Football Sunday. For Evan Gentry, I'm Ty Richardson. Don't spend the rest of the day sitting on your hands. Set your fantasy football lineups, and good luck.
Missed any of Fantasy Football Sunday? Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.